Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Happy New Year. I hope 2018 was great for you because it was great for us. And we kind of review that today on the episode. But before we get to that, I want to talk to you about some of the sponsors we have on this show. One of them happens to be Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Trivia Revolution is a trivia company based out of beer bars and breweries in New Jersey. It's absolutely free to play. It's a great night out. Win prizes to the bars. Win New Jersey craft beer prizes. Even if you're in last place, there's a bonus item each week that you bring it in. You get different points. It is awesome. I host there occasionally on Wednesdays at Tap House 15. You got to come check it out. That is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. We are also brought to you by Wolf Nation, our longtime sponsor. Wake up, live free apparel. You got to check them out. Go to wolfnation.rock. See some of the stuff they're putting out. They're really focusing right now on jackets and hats, leggings, sweatpants. You got to go check them out. Designer clothing for men, women, children, grandmas, dogs. They're up and coming, and they're just a great entrepreneur. Again, that is Wolf Nation. Wake up, live free. It's only a dream if you are not pursuing it. Now, today on the podcast, we do a lot of things. We review the year we had on the podcast, which was fantastic. We'll get into that as the episode goes. We give out our proverbial verbies, if you will, our awards for different categories of guests we had on the show. And today was no different. We had another really great guest. We had author Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong. She wrote a book called Seinfeldia. She wrote a couple other books. She's a very, very good guest, very interesting. It had a very, very good sense of humor. So you got to check her out. Check out her work. And guys, enjoy the podcast. Happy New Year, people.
Hi, this is Jennifer Keeshan Armstrong, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hello, welcome back to everybody to Verbal Shenanigans, the last episode of 2018. Another one in the books, another year down for the show, another year down for life. 1 year ticked away. Berlew, I gotta jump right into this. I can't concentrate.
What's going on?
First off.
Something happened?
You are currently... All right, I got a good picture of that now for social media. But I turn on, we look at each other. We put on the old FaceTime machine, the old Google Hangout is what we use. Mm-hmm. And you're in a full, I don't know if that's a monkey or chimpanzee.
Yes, chimpanzee. That is Rafiki from The Lion King, I believe.
Rafiki. So, now, yeah. Okay, so you're in a full onesie. First off, I hope you're sweating your ass off by 15 minutes into this podcast. Oh, God, don't give me a groin shot.
I did bring a pair of shorts in case I had to go off camera and change now.
I imagine that's about 4 minutes into this, that thing's coming off. But I saw these pictures pop up on Christmas Eve, I want to say.
Maybe. Yeah, Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, okay. No, we haven't talked in a week. I didn't even want to talk about it because it was a little sad. But you are in a full head-to-toe monkey onesie with blue face and including butt. There's a butt on it, like a bear butt. Before we even get into anything, what the hell is going on in the Berlew household? Are you guys freaking losing it down there? What's going on?
No. That was the... We have the tradition of everybody gets one gift on Christmas Eve, and this year my parents decided to give me a gag gift as the Christmas Eve present. So I wore it proudly. I will say it's very comfortable. I will agree with you. This thing gets smoking hot insanely fast. That's why I have not worn it since the 24th. I did consider going down to Petonk and playing in the suit to give the elders a good chuckle, but the nights were kind of warm enough where it's like, God, I'm just going to be sweating. And the last thing I want is sweaty balls and then ripping it, trying to throw a petanque ball.
Yeah. It doesn't look like there's much room for movement either. It looks like it's pretty suctioned to your body.
I got decent movement. I mean, can I say there's no way I'm going to rip it if I start, like, sprinting or something? No, but, I mean, it's not like, ooh, I don't even know how I'm going to get, like, upstairs. Like, we have a gate to keep the cat, as you see it, crossing my computer right now.
Things are, it's just lunacy in the Burlew house lately. right now there's a cat in the screen. You're wearing a monkey suit. I think you're losing it. I think.
Hey, you celebrate New Year's your way. I celebrate it my way, okay? That's how I roll.
I think, you know, you're 1 year older, and I think you're just getting closer to that age where you just don't care about anything. Like,
I think the cat literally hung up.
Oh, he did. You. He did. You went away, which isn't the worst thing in the world. but I think you're getting closer to that age where you just, like, leave the house and you're not going to care what you're doing. It's only a matter of time before you're comfortable with wearing that thing out to, like, the store to pick up eggs or you're going to get an oil change in the monkey suit. It's only a matter of time. I've always wanted to get to that part of my life where I just don't care what I look like, what anybody says. Like, it's coming, but I think you might be one step closer with your monkey suit.
I feel I should use this as the guideline to get back into the stand-up comic career.
Maybe that's your shtick? You're the monkey guy?
The monkey comedian. Yeah, the monkey guy comedian, Michael Burlew.
I'm sure that'll really...
Thorn all through Atlanta. You know it.
You guys hear... They got monkey guy here Friday and Saturday night.
Just 5 minutes of me going, oh, see that? I'm in a monkey suit.
You've seen
that
him open for Carrot Top. Here he is, the monkey guy.
Just a bunch of jokes about bananas and all that crap.
How long did you keep the monkey suit on Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve, if I had to make a guess, I would say at best a half an hour. Because, again, I can see this, like, in a couple of days, we're going near freezing. I could see this as a nice little wardrobe for keeping warm at night. But it gets easily, your body temperature goes up 10, 15 degrees in this thing. They didn't think about, you know, a proper air coolant solution when they designed this.
You have to get really, like, you got to scare the hell out of Izzy in the middle of the night, like walking on your front hands, and you got to get really into this thing.
Yeah. Like, just go full monkey, man, is what you're saying.
Like, blast through sacrifice a bedroom door just for the effect. Like, put aside whatever a bedroom door costs, I don't know, 200 something bucks. You know,
okay,
and just set up like a GoPro or your camera or something on the inside of the room, and just blast through the door in the monkey suit just while she's sleeping.
Oh!
Yeah, pounding your chest, throwing feces. I want everything.
Like, it sounds like a weirdly direct DVD horror movie. You know, first it was just a joke. You know, oh, that's cute. He's wearing a monkey suit. I can't get the suit off for some reason. He's becoming more monkey every day.
Vin Diesel in Monkey Man. Just monkeying around. Well, I'm glad you got your suit, pal. And it's a little disturbing. I'm trying not to look directly at the screen. But anyway, everybody, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. It is a... It is the last episode of 2018, as I mentioned, a year in which I would say, I don't know if my calculations are exact, but something around 72 to 73 guests on the year, including today's episode. So I think last year it was 84. So that means, Burlew, in the last 2 years, we talked to 155 different guests.
Well, I was off for one episode, so I'm at 154, sadly.
Oh, sorry. But yes, the show has talked to about 150 people in the last 2 years. Probably over the 3 years, we've probably done close to, I don't know, probably close to 200-something. So the show is basically a show that we always try to be guest-centric, but we also try to have some fun, talk about life, do some bits and whatnot. And the last couple years we've done a little in the last episode of the year, we do a little reflection on kind of the year and who we got to talk to and some of the cool moments. I guess it was a kind of interesting year because we weren't sure exactly what was gonna happen because you moved in what month did you move down there already? I can't even remember what month.
I moved down in March.
Okay, March.
Of March. Yeah.
So as far as the podcast, we knew we could do it remotely. We didn't know what the schedule was going to be and if it would work. And if you go back, the last podcast I was able to do with you in person, I was able to get John Schneider, who was Bo Duke in the Dukes of Hazzard. Very cool episode. That was kind of like
very much so.
It was just that one was just interesting because like karma just kind of worked out, and I like had contacted his PR person, and was like, "Look, my buddy's moving, blah blah blah. It's a surprise." And like she's like, "Oh, no problem." And we like hooked it up, and just pretty random how that came together. So that's kind of how that year was a big part of the year. With you moving away, but we've been able to keep it very consistent. I was just saying to you before we started recording, these last 2 weeks have been probably the hardest part of the year, and it's weird because you have time off, but yet it doesn't seem like a lot of time off. Right.
Yeah, it's not free time off. It's the go do stuff with family, get some items taken care of while you have that extra time.
Exactly, things that you and the missus like, have been putting off, and you know, you got to go run to this store. We got stuff to do for the wedding. So it's just like, I feel like, yeah, I've had the time off, but it hasn't been the most relaxing time. And then I find personally that I'm way more productive when I have my normal schedule. But if for whatever reason, when I have time off, I just putz around. I just kind of, I don't know, before I know it, hours have passed and a full day has passed. I feel like I get nothing done. When I'm working and I have a normal schedule, I feel like I maximize my time that I do have to myself.
Well, when you're on your schedule, you know you have limited time, so there is no fooling around. The second you get multiple days off, like in this time frame, I mean, I've been off since the weekend before Christmas, so I'm going on now close to a week and a half, and yeah, just the body's almost like, I know you got nothing to do.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, in another hour.
You're not using me to do your things. Nah.
Yeah, take another hour. Yeah, in another hour and a half, you'll do it. At 2 o'clock, you'll do it. At 2 o'clock, I'm going to get up and start doing this. At 3 o'clock, just 3 o'clock. Yeah. You know, and then before you know it.
Oh, wait, Mythbusters is on. I've never seen that episode.
Right, right. So. And then it's like, oh, well, I might as well start getting dinner ready, you know, and we'll figure out dinner. And then, you know, the days just kind of creep by, like, Like I said, I'm way more productive that way. But, this year was very good for the show. Got to talk to a lot of amazing people. And we'll cover that in just a few minutes and go through some of our favorite things. But I thought, Berlo, maybe real quick we'd reflect on some of the – maybe let's see if you can get some of the top 10 news stories in the United States this year. You know, before we go into our show and our guest here, let's just talk about what do you think the top 10, according to Business Insider, were some of the top 10 news stories of the year.
I'm going to say one is North Korea.
North Korea. Let me check.
More specifically, the president meeting with the leader of North Korea.
Not on here, Berlo.
What?
Not,
it was this year, right?
Yeah, I think so. But not on this list. I agree with you. That would be one that I would think is pretty significant for sure. But not on here. Okay. I guess it didn't make the top 10. Okay. Mm. I'll give you number one. Number one was the Parkland school shooting.
Makes sense.
Yeah, which happened on February 14th. And that was the one at the high school in Parkland where 17 kids were killed. And I guess, obviously a tragedy and should be talked about to begin with. But I guess the aftermath of that, the kids speaking out, the kids getting involved, the March for Our Lives, the gun control debates. So that was a rather large, I guess, event, and then the aftermath. I guess you don't really hear too much about it right now. I guess we kind of cooled off for a little bit, but Don't worry, America, you know, school shootings are like apple pie here. So,
yeah.
it's terrible.
We're just going to put it on the flag and all stars, stripes, and some dude pointing at a school.
Yes. it's tough. Well, it's funny because they kind of combined. That was number one, and number four was mass shootings. Okay, so I guess they long. Bro, any guess? I know I'm really bringing up the mood for the new year here. Any guess how many? Any guess how many mass shootings there were in the United States this year?
I mean, that's a little tough. What do they define as mass? Like over four or five? I mean, not trying to make a joke of it, but in all seriousness, to make a guess, you would have to know what they. I'm gonna say ballpark it 130.
307 mass shootings in 2018. 2 months after the Parkland shooting, 8 students and 2 teachers were killed at a school in Santa Fe. In June, 5 employees were shot dead at the Capital Gazette, that newspaper story. October 11, people were killed at that synagogue, if you remember, a little while ago.
Yeah.
In November, the Marine killed people at the bar in California. So 307 mass. I wonder if mass just means like more than one person. I'm not sure. Obviously,
yeah, that's what I'm. I guess make Matt by rule. I guess it'd be more than one. Yeah. So, but
any other any guesses on anything else that was big this year? There's definitely one that I know you'll hit yourself if you don't guess this one. You'll remember.
I'm gonna say the wall / the border.
Okay,
Mexico.
Immigration, they titled it as. The U.S.-Mexico border has remained a permanent fixture in American news all year long. And obviously, just in the last month or so, it's really picked up. Trump deployed thousands of troops to border as a caravan of migrants who traveled from Central America approached the country. As you guys know, I'm sure you've heard of the caravan and seen video and hear the debates over like children's deaths. And it's just that seems to be the hottest of topics when it comes to Trump today, which is every month there's something new. But that seems
good
to
times.
Be number one. Speaking of Trump, okay, the Trump Russian probe was number two on the list, which is a story that I feel like just doesn't go away. Do you care at this point? Like, if they were like, me and Putin rigged it all. We figured it out. Like, at this point, I'd be like, okay, let's just wrap this up. Come on, 2 more years to go. Let's go. Let's get out of here.
I mean, yeah, I think in the... I guess in what will happen, I don't feel, even if it just comes out, beyond a shadow of a doubt, he did something that is going to be enough to drag him out of the office, even with Democrats in the Senate. Anyway, if you think about it, in the long scheme, it's almost genius. I mean, it's corrupt, but it'd be genius to just say, hey, just go on Facebook and make some stupid people even more stupid. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I can't be surprised if it happened, right. and I don't think anything will change. It'll just come to the next election, and point blank, if for any reason he's not in the next election, I think there's going to be rioting just to say, let him back in.
I think he wins the next election. Personally,
if I had to put money down right now, I'd probably say it because he's keeping the same base, and that same base got him the electoral colleges.
Yep.
And he may lose again the popular vote, but again, as we see, that doesn't matter.
Yeah, and we'll see what mutants the Democrats dig up and how they mess it up right before the election and lose half their voters and turn off their voters. And when you know, we'll see what happens with them too.
Well, clearly, if they put in a 78-year-old Bernie Sanders, that's gonna rally people. So.
Well, they denied him once, so maybe he gets maybe he'll get his actual chance. Berlow's number
three. Super delegates.
Number three. Keep this moving along. Here was something we tried to keep track of was the Me Too movement.
I think you won 1-0. I would have to check the whole thing.
Did I get one?
And you, Vince McMahon.
We tried to do a Me Too pool, if you will, to try to see we guessed who would be on the Me Too movement. That was a giant story that dominated a little of 2017 and 2018. The midterm elections, those were huge.
Yep.
Flip.
I want to guess another one, if you don't mind. Saudi Arabia, the journalist that got murdered. Did he make the top 10?
He did. And that number 10, the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, or I hope I'm not pronouncing that terribly wrong, but Jamal Khashoggi. Midterm elections, the other one, immigration, we say. I thought you would guess this one, but the whole Brett Kavanaugh, Supreme Court nomination, that was super dominant for quite a while there. And again, seemed to kind of blow over because politicians are dirtbags.
Yep.
And the last two are California wildfires, which I believe they finally got completely under control, if I'm not mistaken. But nearly 14,000 homes and hundreds of businesses destroyed. 88 people died. And the last one they have on here is actually climate change. Natural disasters around the world increase attention on climate change. A global summit in Poland led delegates to negotiate an agreement on the next steps to minimize harm. A report released by the government in the U.S. warned of devastating impact, but was pushed back by President Donald Trump. So
basically, our top 10 stories are all, we're all screwed, or it's garbage, or somebody's dying.
Mass shootings, president, harassment. That's top 10 stories of this year.
Can we have a year where it's like, oh yeah, the year cancer was taken care of. That was good. That was a good year.
Any predictions for the year 2019? Things you think might happen?
Things that may happen.
Like I think I'm thinking by June of next year, Jersey medical marijuana will be legal. I'm thinking that's coming. I know that's coming, but I know it's not a bullet.
It's been growing, and it's going to happen in more and more states.
Yeah,
I don't think the entire United States will say, yep, now we're going to consider it legal, but it's on the movement. If I had to make a guess, 2021, 2022, somewhere in that time frame.
Well, interesting story about that real quick before – I'll let you think about your predictions for the end of the episode.
All right.
So my dog's been having some hip issues. I thought it was hip issues. And then later on, I kind of shifted thinking that it's his groin, like basically underneath his hip, because whenever I move his leg after we went for walks, he'd be basically like screaming, wincing, you know, like wouldn't let me touch him. But every 24 hours, he'd be fine, like after walks. And the other day, he was just real bad right from the beginning. So I'm like, I know something's going on. I think it's an injury. I thought it was arthritis and things like that. I thought it was some kind of injury. So long story short, I take him to the vet. I got to get x-rays done. I still haven't got the x-ray results in, but God, crossing my fingers, that's not like surgery or something ridiculous like that, because Scott might be looking for some kind of sponsors all over the country. I'll advertise.
We'll be growing Patreon.
Yeah. I'll advertise anything you guys want on this show.
Monkey suit.
But so I was talking to the doctor, and I was like, so what, what do you recommend or whatever? He's like, honestly, he's like, when weed becomes legal, he's like, I won't be prescribing anything but THC to dogs with like inflammation and swelling and stuff like that. He's like, there's no side effects, no, you know, nothing. And I found it interesting that, you know, even like just because it's illegal, like even dogs can't take it, you know what I mean? Because people would probably take their dog's medication, you know?
Every guy would be going in there with like a stray cat. Yeah, my cat seems to have anxiety since I picked him up from the sewers last night. I really think...
Sir, that's a raccoon.
Yeah, man, he's getting worse and all. He was a cat when I got him in there, so we got to give him some of that THC.
Yeah. And then I was like, you know, how about CBD oil? And he's like, I can't sell it here yet. And he's like, but I give it to my dogs after every walk. So I went and I splurged and got CBD oil for a container that's like, it's basically like one fluid ounce. It was $75.
I've heard that.
So
I think we talked about it on this show once before.
Oh,
I can't remember.
Oh. Well, if I'm repeating myself, doesn't matter. But... So we'll see. Obi got his second dose of weed today, so we'll see if it at least gives gives the dog a little bit of relief on the inflammation front. So
now, how does he react when he takes his medication? Does it look like he's tripping in some way, or?
Well, yeah, he starts playing my ukulele, and he loves his tie-dye blanket. No,
Obi, stop putting fish on the radio.
No, well, it's funny. There's really no psychoactive parts in it in CBD oil. It says it's 0.008, like any THC that even gets in there. It's just the hemp part of it. So, but it's funny. It says it will relax the dog, and it's for hip and joint issues. I'm like, oh man, my dog relaxed. He might not wake up till next week. but so far, nothing. He's only had the two squirts so far. So I'm guessing it's going to be like an overtime kind of thing and see how it works. But I thought it was interesting that, you know, like, even the dogs can't have their weed but
damn hippie dogs.
But I think it's time to rally the horses here, and let's get our guest on the line. And when we get back from that, we're gonna go over our favorites for the year, the Verbies, if you will. So let's get to our guest though first. And so a couple months ago, I had read the book Seinfeldia. I think I remember telling you about this. It was what inspired me to get Kenny Kramer on the podcast. Mm-hmm. So I was reading the book, and Kenny Kramer's story was in it. I thought, oh, that'd be an interesting get. So today, we actually have the author of that book coming on, Jennifer Armstrong. Jennifer, I hope I'm not mispronouncing, Cation Armstrong. She's wrote a couple books before. She's a very accomplished author. So we're going to give her a call.
Sounds like a plan.
Thank you, Michael Berlew Soundboard.
Yeah.
I should try to do that one day. Do a whole episode without you, but just import sounds into...
You just keep hitting the snake milk button all day long.
That would take so much work for so little payoff, too. Like, you know, the four people that listen to it. All right, let's give Jennifer a call.
This is Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer. It's Scott from Verbal Shenanigans. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm great. Hold on. Let me just merge in mic real quick. Hold on.
Okay.
Jen, you should hear Mike. Mike, say hello.
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 He's very animated over there. Jen, first off, thank you for giving us a few minutes here. Really appreciate the time. I was just saying to Mike several months ago, right on my summer vacation, like at the end of August, I picked up the book Seinfeldia. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. I mean, I was a huge Seinfeld fan growing up, and still now, it's still like one of those things like, oh, it's on, I'm going to put it on, you know, fall asleep to, put on a couple episodes straight. You know, it's one of those things you kind of pick up wherever it is and watch. It's like Shawshank Redemption. Like, whenever I see it, just watch Forrest Gump. I just watch a little bit of it. And I thought the book was great, so I figured it'd be fun to reach out to you and kind of hear your perspective. And I know you're an author of several other things, but first off, I guess let's start with Seinfeldia real quick. Were you a diehard avid fan? Is that how you got the idea to write about this? Did someone tell you, hey, you should write about it? How did the idea come across to you?
I always say, I feel like if you grew up in the 90s, it wasn't like a choice.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It was just sort of like, so I don't identify as a diehard fan only because I don't feel like I have this moment where I was like, this is what I'm going to be into. It was just more like, it was so prevalent at that time. Like, you couldn't not watch it if you were a person who cared about pop culture and watched television and wanted to talk to people about it. That's what people were going to be talking about on Friday morning. You know, it was on Thursday nights, and for the kids out there, you used to have to watch a TV show when it was on. And so that's what you would do. And yeah, it was just like wallpaper in the best way in my life in the 90s. And then I, like many people, I just continued to kind of watch reruns, like you said, when they're on, you just sort of watch it. And it really infiltrated the culture because of the way that people have consumed it over the years. You know, it's like... it's just everywhere. Like, there are things that we say we don't even think about but are from there, yada yada yada, not that there's anything wrong with that, no right. soup for you, all that stuff. And so it just felt like, if I'm going to write books about TV history, this was something that was just sitting there waiting to be done. And I sort of couldn't believe, like all good book ideas, actually, I couldn't believe it hadn't really been done yet. So I was really excited to be the one to do it.
Like a coffee table book about coffee tables?
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, I mean, you really dove well into it. Now, were you, did this take, like, what is the research like in this? Because it obviously, it covers very early on in the pitching the show, mm-hmm. all the way through many years after the show, where a lot of the cast went. What kind of research went into the book?
Yeah, I mean, it took probably, it usually takes me a little over a year to research a book like this. And, you know, that's doing it kind of full time as my main thing. It was a lot of, I mean, there's just obvious things, like people are always like, did you have to rewatch all of the show? Yes, I always rewatch the show. Like, that's the first thing I do for real, because it's different. There's a difference between having seen it before and watching it for a book. And then it's just kind of like getting all the information that's out there, first of all, and then kind of figuring out who I want to talk to. And something that I really enjoyed with this book and got into and kind of named it for to some extent was not necessarily like the people who we've talked to a million times who made the show, but all of these other kind of weird characters who populate what I called Seinfeldia.
Right.
You know, Larry Thomas, who played the soup Nazi, who continues to make his main living playing the soup Nazi at events. Like, that's 20 years later. That's extraordinary. He was on the show once and he still goes around saying no soup for you to people and gives them the thrill of their lives, you know?
Yeah.
So it was all of these kind of people that have almost, there's people like him. There's people like the real Kramer, the guy who inspired Kramer, the character.
You inspired me to reach out to him, and we had him on the show about a month and a half, 2 months ago, something like
he's
that.
Fun, so, right?
Yeah, a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
He's Kenny Kramer is so much fun, and he really still seems to like embody that character in this way. That the way I always explain it is like, you don't really know what he does for a living.
Right.
You're like, what? Why are you able to exist just on being Kramer? It's just how he's lived his life. And it's own kind of inspiration. You know, there's the people who are kind of professional fans, essentially, like the guy behind the account, the Twitter account Seinfeld 2000, who still is tweeting like weird mashups of current culture and Seinfeld's. which takes a really special person and dedication. So it's just that stuff to me, I love these kind of indications of like how it lives on and how it can kind of take, you know, it's taken over Larry Thomas or Kenny Kramer's life way more than it's taken over Jerry Seinfeld's life in some ways. And I think that that's fascinating.
Well, if you watch every episode, I'm looking forward to your Simpsons book that will take about 8 years to go through every single one.
Absolutely.
So when you start something like this, what is your initial goal to kind of tackle? Is it like the backstories, just the influence in your life, or trying to find new people? Where do you even dive into something as big as that phenomena?
I think what I'm always looking for is like, what is the thing at the center of this actual story? Like, I'm trying to tell a narrative, which is why, by the way, too, I'm often, you know, sometimes people hit me up online and stuff and be like, why isn't this one random character in there more or whatever? And it's like, you know, like Newman isn't in the book that much and he's great, but it's just, I'm trying to tell an actual story. So I'm looking for the highlights of the story. So something like Seinfeld, to me, what was extraordinary is how it does live on, you know, decades later in people's actual everyday lives, whether it's those people I just mentioned or the regular people like us who watch it and are still quoting it all the time. To me, that's, it's a story about how this thing keeps playing in our lives, you know? And so that's what I'm always looking for, like, what's the actual story? So like, and then something like my most recent book was Sex and the City Us. Yep. And so that was where, to me, the real story there was similar in a sense that it still lives on in everyday lives of people, but it's very, in very different ways. So it's like about the ways that it you know, affected how we talk about sex, how we have relationships, how we, it's very, a very personal kind of thing in a way that Seinfeld isn't necessarily, is more of a cultural thing. Mm. So that was why, so for instance, like in my Sex and the City book, I talk about my own story and how that show actually helped to inspire me to cancel a wedding. Whereas like Seinfeld didn't do that. Sorry.
Right.
That would be weird. But you know, Seinfeld is very different, and it's about how it kind of keeps living on in culture every single day to this day.
Well, let's talk about you for a second.
Okay.
as a writer, I know that you, you know, I looked into some, I know you worked at Entertainment Weekly for a while.
Mm-hmm.
When did you, like, have you, are you one of those people who, like, I always wanted to be a writer, like, that's what they wanted to do coming out of school, or did writing kind of find you in a different avenue? Where did you really, you know, start getting into not only just writing, I guess, for Entertainment Weekly and whatnot, but writing full novels?
Yeah, I always wanted to be a writer. I mean, I'm sure that I know there are people who kind of come at it more like, oh, I'm an expert in psychology, and then I started writing about my expertise. But I'm definitely like a writer. So mm-hmm. I don't really remember a time when I didn't want to write. And I mean, my mom gave me her old typewriter when I was a kid. And by the time I was 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 years old, I was like very obnoxious and typing. Like I remember that I used to write plays and make all of my friends do them in my parents' garage. I was very bossy.
You should still do that exact same thing.
I should do the exact same
thing. In your parents' garage.
Yeah. In my parents' garage.
We're going to do Mary Tyler Moore this time.
We're going to reenact Mary Tyler Moore show in Homer Glen, Illinois, in my mother's garage. So I was just, and they all, for some reason, did it. That's what's insane to me. But they're all like, yes, that's a great idea. But it's just, I've always been writing like short stories and these sorts of things. And then I did also love pop culture. And so I was lucky that eventually, it wasn't true at first. I was like a local news reporter for several years at the beginning of my career.
Mm-hmm.
But I was lucky that I was eventually able to kind of like move toward this thing that I was really passionate about and got to write about. Mostly, I mean, I write a little bit about other kinds of pop culture, but mostly TV history.
And you've done 3 books so far. My dog's going.
Hello.
Well, you're not interviewing our guest tonight, okay? Yeah, I love pets. Anyway, so I mean, tackling the 3 different shows. I mean, did you tackle them all the same way, or is it a little different? Considering like Mary Tyler Moore was way later on, and then we got current Seinfeld. Did you have to do a different take for each one on how they impacted America?
Yeah, I mean, I am like, also just because I'm a writer and restless and everything else, I kind of want there to be a little bit of a difference each time. And so we talked about the other two, but like with the Mary Tyler Moore Show book, which was the first of these 3, that one was really about when I figured out that was the first show that had multiple female writers on staff behind the scenes versus before that there were a lot of shows that would have like one token female. And once I realized that, and I found out that it was essentially because the creators James L. Brooks and Alan Burns actually recruited women who had very little experience at times to write for them because they wanted the authenticity of those women's experiences in their scripts, and they were willing to mentor those women. That to me was a story, and I thought, like, of course I love the show, and that's why I was initially looking into it.
Right.
But that fact behind the scenes kind of echoes the way that show affected millions, you know, generations of young women who watched it and were inspired by it. So there were also women behind the scenes who were basically, you know, causing that inspiration and also then using that experience they had on that show to go out and do other things in the TV industry. So it has kind of this echo effect through television.
Now, how hard is it to take the leap from whether you're working for a TV network or a newspaper to take the leap to be like, okay, I'm going to write my own book, and, you know, I'm taking the leap. I'm going to I'm going to either make money off this or I'm going to be looking for work soon. How hard is it to just be a writer and make that first leap to independent writing?
It's challenging. I've always been a little bit reckless,
right.
Which I think helps anybody, you know, probably anybody who like gets to do the thing they really want to do is a little bit reckless.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those times, sort of, but I also was on staff at Entertainment Weekly for 10 years and decided like that I was kind of done with, like, I was
right.
restless and I was uh-huh. done with that. And I was like, all right, I'm going to sell a book. And that was when I put together the proposal for Mary and Lou and Rhoda and Ted, and kind of had an idea in mind of like, okay, I have to sell it for this much money or else it's not going to work.
Right.
And I don't know what was going to happen. Like, I guess I mean, there was a possibility, I guess I was going to say no if they didn't give me enough money. I was just lucky that it happened, that I could kind of like, actually quit my job and build my career out from here, because I just felt really strongly that I didn't want to write that book and be employed full time, because it was like working for EW was all consuming enough, you know. Mm-hmm. we had the internet to fill by then,
right.
We had all this, you know, it's like it was a constant, so it would have been very difficult to write a good book about the Mary Tyler Moore Show. That was my concern, and so I was lucky in that way, and I've been able to kind of like build my income on book stuff, and then on top of that I do some freelancing.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so like I'd like to know pick your brain on what type mm-hmm. of writer you are. Like I'm approaching this from a comics point of view. We write loose, like I personally write loosely a bit on paper, and then I go and try it on stage and it fails, and then I mold it again mm-hmm. on stage. I do a lot of it on stage instead of writing it completely fluently out. When you are a writer and you're doing these big projects, or you'll free write and stuff like that too. What is your writing per day? What is your routine? Like, how do you lay it out? Do you lay it out in stages and bullet points and then work on chapters? Like, what is your technique for yourself?
Yeah, and it took me, I mean, I still sort of joke, like, every time I start a new book, I'm like, wait, I don't think I know how to write a book.
Yeah.
But I think I have kind of figured it out after three, but it took a while. And basically what I would say is that my routine depends on where I am in the process. It's mm-hmm. very different depending, because it's nonfiction. So I have to have facts before
right.
I can start writing. So, you know, I might be in a stage where I'm mostly reading things, reading other research, doing that stuff, and I love that part. Then I get a huge stack of research, and I'm still like a person with the paper and like highlighter,
right?
And I'll go through and you know, figure out the stuff I really want. I build a huge outline. I build like a normal outline, and then I put bullet points in and build a huge outline with all the facts that
yeah.
I want to hit. And it's only then that I can, because it's all sitting there, I can now actually write. You know, and
yeah.
so it kind of it's like almost, I almost think of it as like filling in a tree or something. It's like you're hanging tinsel on the tree or something for Christmas, where I'm like filling it out more and more and more. And then all of a sudden one day there's a book.
Yeah.
Where there wasn't
one. I'm like fascinated by how, you know, like, because, you know, we all have these ideas for books that maybe we want to one day do. And I've had this idea for a long time, but just sitting down to start it. And I love that some people they use new software to write things. Some people mm-hmm. use color-coded Post-its on the wall. Some people just scribble in journals and somehow figure it out and put it all together. It's just, I'm fascinated by how different people's minds work when it comes to wrapping it around a whole idea.
Yeah, and it is really different when it's nonfiction versus, like, I'm always jealous of my fiction writing friends who can kind of just go to a cafe, and I get that that's its own challenge, but that they can make it up out of thin air, whereas, like, my stuff all, and I do have a note card phase. There's a point at which I put all the bullet points on note cards, spread them out across a whole room, and then make little piles until they become chapters then kind of put the chapters in order. So it's a whole, I've always loved, like, you know, office supplies, so for me this is very fun. I like that tactile part of it.
Interesting. Yeah. Now with three different books about three different shows, as a writer, is it something where you like want to tackle another show, or are you worried about getting almost stereotyped as person who just writes about TV shows? How you feel about going on from here?
I mean, I so I'm like in the middle of a proposal right now for my next one that I hope will be my next one. And what I will say about it, I'm not trying to be like weird and coy, but basically it's about TV history, but it's not like a one show deal.
Gotcha.
That's a really nice way to do things, I have to admit. And that's why I've been grooving on it for three books, because it's just like a little biography of a show. But I'm excited about this next one because it'll be kind of the same but different, which I think is where we all kind of like to go. It's right. Like I'm not even worried about, like, you know, getting pigeonholed as much as I am just kind of like, I want to do something. Like, I kind of got this down, you know. It's like, like, you know, to some extent, it's like each of these books is like, no one thought it would work.
Right.
Then it did. Right. Then it was huge. Then it affected the culture in these ways. And it's like, that's fine. There are worse things in the world, but right. I would like the challenge of kind of mixing things up a little. So I'm hoping this works out and we'll see if it does.
Do you ever have days where you completely do something different? You go, okay, I'm going to write fiction. I'm going to write sketches. I'm going to write what? Like, do you ever just have days like, screw it, let's try something else?
Not really at this point.
Right.
Most of my money is made in certain areas.
Gotcha.
I haven't written fiction in a long time. I thought I was going to be a novelist one time. But, you know, it's more like sometimes I write about pop music for Billboard, and that's exciting for me still. When they let me write about Britney Spears, I'm like super excited. It doesn't really matter what I'm doing. Like, I'm still excited by that because it's different. And I am writing actually a little like gifty book right now about I haven't really talked about this yet, but it's basically it's about how it's about female pop stars and how we kind of treat them as our modern goddesses and kind of how they each represent something to us. So I'm writing a little book about that. And so that's like enough difference,
right,
you
right,
know,
right, right.
It's like just exciting enough and feels a little, you know, a little taste of that kind of like, oh, I can't believe somebody's paying me to do this, you yeah. know, which is that just joy of what we do that is exciting. But, you know, maybe someday I'll be doing stand up. I don't know.
No, right, why not?
Interesting. With all this like research with music and television, do you have like a side hobby that's almost like completely out of pop culture? Like, is somebody talking about Game of Thrones, you're like, shut up, I gotta talk about Shakespeare or something like that?
I actually do love Shakespeare. But I have to say, it's so funny because like my biggest hobbies are pretty pop culture adjacent. Like, I take dance class, but it's like pop dance, you know, like Beyonce and Britney. And then I do play guitar and sing and do like covers of pop songs. So it's like close, but those are the things I did take up, especially like guitar and singing. I started doing because I realized I had to have something else to do that wasn't writing.
Yeah,
that was the big thing. It's just like, and I don't like, it turns out I'm not great at writing songs, so the option is to learn songs that I know. And so I've learned tons of songs and on and off have gone to open mics and stuff like that. I'm like, fine, I'm not great.
Right.
You know, and it's just at least physically in a different part of my brain, kind of like not sure. sitting at the computer writing. So that was the big thing there. But I still ended up right back at like Beyonce. So
I just picture some terrible acoustic version of All the Single Ladies.
I do not do that.
All the Single Ladies.
Somebody with a tambourine in the back, you know.
Really slow.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm going to try to do it now.
No, I think you totally should. Speaking of side projects, on your website, you do you still do the podcast?
I do. Yeah, we just started it not that long ago. I have a podcast called Pop Literacy. That has been really fun, too, because it's another one of those where, you know, we might not be making millions of dollars on it already.
No, right.
But it's been really fun to be doing that because it's a place where I get to do anything I want to, and I don't have to pitch it to anyone. So it's been really fun, and I do it with a friend, and yeah, people should check it out.
Yeah. I mean, don't worry, Jen. After this, after we stop recording, we will tell you how to make millions of dollars podcasting.
Oh, good. Yeah. Oh, good.
Hey, Scott, how come you never told me how we make millions of dollars? Wait a minute.
Jen, it's been really, I mean, it's fun talking to you. I love talking to writers and just creative people, because it's just What I love about it is everybody's process is so different. Like, that would be a book I would love to read. Like, just...
Oh, yeah.
People...
I love that stuff.
Yeah, like, everyone's different writing process, like, whether it's musicians, poets, you know, there's always, like, a similarity, but then there's always just complete differences. So I really enjoy that. If people want to go check out your work or go say hi or just look you up, what's the best place for them to go?
There's everything you could possibly want is at jenniferkarmstrong.com. All my social stuff is there. The link to the podcast, Pop Literacy, there. You can get it all.
Yes. And what are you working on now that you can tell us about?
So I'm working on the Pop Star Goddesses right now and doing some freelance work. But I'm hoping that I will have some bigger book news in January or February.
Perfect.
Interesting. Last question. What do you think would be the absolute worst show you would have to write a book about?
I do this joke all the time because I like to imagine, like, calling my agent and being like, I'm super excited. Listen, I'm going to do a book about Alf. And just, like, see what the reaction would be. Like, I'm going to do Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Yeah,
I know no one remembers this.
Yeah, that was Ryan Reynolds.
That's the only reason I remember it, because it was Ryan Reynolds. Or like, I'm going to do The Single Guy. Are you super excited? And just like see, and I do joke about this. And then like my partner always says, you know, what if you do that? And then everyone's like, yes, you should do that. And then suddenly you're going to find yourself like writing a book about The Single Guy. So I haven't done it so far.
Or better yet, like a whole book series about every show they tried to force down our throat between Seinfeld and Friends.
Oh,
every one of them that just died in 5 seconds.
Veronica's Closet. Does everybody remember Veronica's Closet or maybe Jesse or
Suddenly Susan?
Honestly, that could be like it could be an interesting book though, because you could find all this like undercover dirt and like the secret world that was going on to try to make the next Seinfeld. And that would, you know.
Oh, I mean, it could. I actually could see that. Caroline in the City.
Oh yeah,
there we go. That's the one I was. This is a fun game.
This is what the kids don't understand is they don't understand that if you put it between the two big hits, we all watched it.
Yeah.
So these shows had like hilariously high numbers. There was like 40 million people watching The Single Guy or whatever, and like no one wanted to be, but we all just kept our TVs on. It was a very strange time.
Jen, thank you so much for giving us the time, man. And
sure.
We really appreciate it and look forward to your work. And like I said, I really enjoyed your work, so thank you for giving us a few minutes.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Berlo. So what TV show, if you were asked right now, like they said, look, you got 6 months, your life depends, your mortgage depends on it, okay?
Everything.
Everything's on the line. You're like, your current lifestyle, yourself, like they said, you have to write a book about a similar kind of book, like an expose kind of book. What show could you really pick apart you think you'd have a chance at?
I mean, there's a few to come to mind. I mean, the joke answer is Dukes of Hazzard, but I probably couldn't take a good stab at that one.
Yep.
Married with Children, that was a big show coming up. I think that was like kind of the move away from the family shows over to the, you know, non-PC shows.
Yep.
So that might be interesting. Or I can just go crazy and go do Cop Rock. That show that showed up
my God,
one time.
Yeah. Jeez.
And they put so much money into it, ABC, and you're like, how on earth did you think that was going to work?
I was just watching on Netflix the 90s. Like it was, I think it was on CNN originally. I think even Tom Hanks produced it or something. I don't know. But it was just a documentary on the 90s. It was, and they were talking about Cop Rock the other day. I was like, oh my God. Like, I barely remember seeing this, but I remember, like, the jokes about it for, like, forever afterwards, you know, like a singing cop show.
There was episodes we never got to saw. I think they made, like, 4 episodes, and they only aired the one.
Oh, well, maybe you should reach out and get those episodes, and we should.
I think we should do a whole month of members from Cop Rock.
All right.
Purple Shenanigans.
Listen, if we're going to, we might be reading Amish romance novels soon.
Yeah.
So
that's the tie-in.
We might set this up in the new year. So if this episode comes out when it's supposed to, the next episode, you might hear me and Mike reading chapters from Amish Romance. So if that's a market, then why can't Cop Rock History, Cop Rock Podcast, maybe even
absolutely.
You could definitely check that out. But Jennifer, all right, Berlo, I'm ready for you to write your Dukes of Hazzard book. I'm ready.
I mean, it's a new year. It's a new yeehaw. So I think it makes sense. You know, I mean, it should be Journeys to Chickasaw County.
It does sound. It sounds emotional. It sounds deep.
Yeah. And on that day, I realized I was the cooter in life.
You're a cooter, all right, pal.
Yep. Crazy cooter. Mm.
All right, so I guess it is time. Every year we try to pick our favorites. We try to make a couple categories and whatnot and give our own awards, if you will. Now, we have not talked about this prior, so we might have some of the same picks. I'm not sure. But Berlo, let's get into the verbies here, if you will.
Nice.
The verbies. Yeah. Maybe I'll put on some celebratory music.
Verbies.
Thanks for taking us out of the moment.
Ah, well, you know, I think I accidentally did Sanford and Son. Now I think back to that. Well, sound.
Your life is just stuck in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah. None of this junk. I don't want to know how you met your mother. I want to talk about Maud.
All right.
I guess first category, we're going to go with TV, movie, and actors. These are all of our guests that have been either actors or had some role in TVs and movies.
All right. So we had a good chunk of them this year as I'm looking at the list. Why don't you run through them real quick? Sum up what they did or who.
All right. Michael Stern, he was an animator for Pixar.
He was one of the guys that took me the longest to get on the show. I remember talking to him months and months before they had to get clearance from Disney and Pixar. It was pretty cool. He was a animator. He did like How to Train Your Dragon and Coco and stuff like that. So pretty cool.
Plus, we had basically a Disney supervisor listening to our entire conversation without saying a word.
I feel like Disney's doing that to all conversations at this point.
Yeah, pretty much.
There's right definitely now. On the line right now, like, ooh.
No, they haven't done anything yet, so we'll keep going. Paul Zaloom, who was Beakman in Beakman's World. Ray Hulit, who was Zap on American Gladiators. Don Jameson, a comedian who's been on TV.
Also done our Verbal Shenanigans comedy show before.
Yep. Rob himself from Jackass. John Schneider, Bo Duke. AJ Mattioli, our recurring guest, LGBTQ producer and director of different movies. Gregory Scott Cummins, who plays Max Dad. Sandy Martin, who plays Mac's mom and also was in Three Billboards and the upcoming Dumbo movie. Bob Rush, who played one of the McBoyles.
Oh, yes.
Reed Booth, who is the Killer Bee guy. He's also done some nature shows for Discovery Channel.
Yes.
Steve Whiting, who was one of the neighbors in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and also he was in the Hogan Family.
And Batman. Had his nose bitten off by Danny DeVito.
Yeah. Michael Bell, who did various voices for cartoons such as G.I. Joe and the Smurfs and many of our other classics, Transformers. Kenny Kramer, technically not TV, but he is the basis of the real Kramer in Seinfeld. I figured I'd throw him in there. Brandon Novak, who was, again, in the Jackass movies and Viva La Bam. And Alex Vincent, who played Andy Barkley in the Child's Play movies.
And we got a recent review on that episode. I believe it said, these interviews were, what did he say?
these interviewees were cringeworthy.
Cringeworthy. So go check that episode out, guys.
If you love the cringe, you love the shenanigans.
All right, so quite a lot on that list. This is one of our more full categories this year. Barlow, care to take the honors? First one.
I will give my vote to Michael Bell.
Michael Bell.
Yeah, I thought he was fun interview. Sort of a little slow, but then we got into things. I loved his story about how he basically yelled at LeBron James to cry.
And, yeah, I love that too.
And how he had a job recently doing the voice for G.I. Joe in an episode of Community, and he changed his voice to make him wonder if he still had it or not. And then he just threw it out there and did it perfectly. I thought it was a real fun interview, real blast to talk to him.
Yeah, I enjoyed that one too. But I'm going to go with Rab himself from Jackass. I thought we got a really kind of detailed interview on some of his times. And him, similar to Brandon Novak, really talked about how he got clean. You know, the party scene that was going on with Jackass and how it caught up to him, some of the work he's doing. And he also has his own podcast now, too, the Bathroom Break podcast. So I went with Rab himself from Jackass.
That's interesting. As my backup, in case you grab mine, Brandon Novak, just on the basis of how real the interview was.
And... Oh, Brandon Novak. Yeah.
Yeah.
It would have been funny if we chose Rab and Brandon Novak. Jackass centric, but that's my pick.
All right.
What category we got next?
Let's do sports.
This was a huge,
really big list on there.
Yeah. All right, give it to him, Berlo.
All right, Kenny Anderson, former guard for the New Jersey Nets,
Mr. Chibs
himself went to the NBA Finals. John Morris, a gold medal winning curler from Canada. Al Snow from WWE and ECW. Christian Okoye, the Nigerian Nightmare for the Kansas City Chiefs. Devin Harris, a former Olympic bobsledder for Jamaica. Randy Santel, one of our recurring guests, foodchallenges.com. He does different videos on YouTube on food challenges.
Yep.
Senzor Korkmaz. He is the owner and runner of the A7FL. That is the football league with no pads, full tackle, based out of New Jersey. Dave Kamala, surfer.
Kalama. Yep, Kamala is the dead, dead fat
no,
wrestler.
He's still around.
Really?
He's missing both of his legs, but he's still around. Don LaGreca, personality for WFAN radio. Paul Rodriguez Jr., a skateboarder. Gary Goodridge, MMA, original UFCer. Jim Miller, MMA, UFC fighter, just fought a couple weeks ago. Unfortunately, got choked out in the first round. Contra Corbett, our extreme marathon runner.
Mm-hmm.
Kirby Chambliss, he does the Red Bull airplane racing.
One of my favorite guests in general. We've had him on twice. Plan to have him on again in the future, but just one of my all time favorite guests, Kirby Chambliss.
Very good guy. Christian and Damian DeVoe, those are the guys who do the World Chase Tag Championships over in England. Aaron Yoder, the world record holder for the quick fastest backwards mile. Aaron Muss, a Olympic skier. Marcelo Balboa, one of our recurring guests and friends. He was on the U.S. men's national team. He
been on
played
three times.
MLS, and now he commentates for Univision for MLS. And Joe Jacoby, three-time Super Bowl winner for the Washington Redskins, offensive tackle, should be Hall of Famer sometime soon.
Yes. So this was a tough category for me. One of our strongest categories we've ever had as far as personnel on a list. I came real close to choosing Don LaGreca.
He was my number two.
Yeah, he was my number two also. The only reason I didn't was just because the interview wasn't as long. So I went with someone who we got a pretty long interview with. So Don LaGreca, I thought was fantastic, and I it's cool because I get to listen to Don LaGreca here, like on the way home from work almost every day. So I flip them on, and he's just a really, really fantastic guy. But my number one, Berlo, I went with Paul Rodriguez. I went with P. Rod, the skateboarder, legendary skateboarder. Has a massive following. His dad is a comic. I just thought we got a really awesome interview. Talked about him and Mr. T, him on Mr. T's shoulders or something like that. And he gave us a lot of time. I just thought it was a very, I guess, a very good interview. I think you guys should go check it out. P. Rod.
Yeah, definitely. It was a great chatting with him and all. He was, if I recall, he's on Mr. T's shoulders to go to the bathroom, and he was waving to one of the girls from Full House. So anytime you have a story like that, it's always deserving of a Verbi.
He might have won skateboard tournaments. He might have won. He might have Nike sponsorship and restaurants, but now he has the ultimate trophy for his trophy case, the Verbi.
Note, the Verbis don't actually provide trophies to the winners at all.
We should send little trophies of you in like a monkey suit to each of them. Congrats on your Verbi. What the hell is this thing?
Me in a monkey suit holding up a clover. That will be the Verbi.
Berlo, I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, it shouldn't be too much a surprise. It was one of our, it was our last sports interview of the year, but was a really good moment for me. I'm giving it to Joe Jacoby. Growing up a Redskins fan, it was so amazing to talk with him, have fun stories about how he basically signed a contract and then reminded them he was an offensive lineman, even though the coach was talking to him about the defensive schemes, just in general talk about the play of the NFL back then and what it is now when he got out. It was on the same weekend after Alex Smith's injury, so we kind of delve into the whole Joe Theismann thing and all the common stuff. And the biggest thing I get a chuckle and laugh about is when I informed him that the Skins signed Mark Sanchez, and just that "oh" kind of moment from him. And because well, you can really tell he's like, "Wow, yeah, I can't believe they did that."
And then Josh Johnson.
Well, Johnson got us a win, so.
Yeah, well, another ho-hum season for the Redskins, another devastating season for the Giants, so.
Yep.
The Redskins' motto should be ho-hum. We're going to float around 8-8 every single year.
We're not going to be close to the players. I mean, we'll be close enough where you go, you keep on talking about the chance.
Yeah.
But then we're going to rip it from you at the last minute.
Giants should be all or nothing. That should be their motto. They're either deep into the playoffs in the Super Bowl or literally
taking the first round.
Exactly. Terrible. 6 out of 7 years, no playoffs for the Giants. So they get too many passes for me. People give them too many passes and act like they're a better team than they are because of the Super Bowls. But it's been a while, man. And it's been a lot of down years in a row, so unacceptable. All right, where are we going next?
Right. I'm gonna go to music. I'll say the names.
Killer category
intros, since you know more about a couple of these than I do. Be honest, at least the songs and whatever. Gift of Gab.
We started the year off strong with Gift of Gab. He was our first interview of the year, I believe. And he is half of Blackalicious, awesome rap group, and he was a great interview.
Really cool. What, great way to start the year. Snow.
Informer. That's all I really got to say. Canadian Canadian reggae artist. We probably all, if you are of our age or older, you probably remember his song playing all over the place for a while. Back in the 90s. So Snow, that was a cool one.
Yeah, I remember him talking about how cool it was to perform with Cyndi Lauper, if I recall.
Right.
Yeah. Andrew W.K.
Yes. Andrew Let's W.K., party legend, just a unique personality. I think most people might know who he is. It was really cool to talk to him, too.
Yeah, John Fryer.
John Fryer was, he helped record artists like he was involved with Nine Inch Nails and Depeche Mode. He had his own band. He came on. He was a pretty interesting interview. He has a band called Black Needle Noise that he was promoting. So he's just been around for a long time. Worked with a lot of interesting musicians.
Michael Lopresti.
Michael Lopresti.
Him and Ryan Walker.
Michael Lopresti and Ryan Walker.
I like their chances in this category.
They were from a band called The Lighthouse and The Wailer. Indie band. Pretty cool guys. Got some good songs.
Carrie Kimmel.
Carrie Kimmel was recommended to us by a... one of the PR places we deal with. She's a pop artist, up and coming. She was a very nice girl.
Lucy Spraggan.
Lucy Spraggan might have been one of my favorite interviews of the year. She's from Ireland, I believe. She was another one recommended to us to interview. And she just had awesome stories about not just her music, but like working in caves. And she was just... awesome interview. Really, really enjoyed her.
I know you're going to like these. Ed and Riley Breckenridge.
Ed and Riley, both of the band Thrice Brothers. Ed the bassist, Riley the drummer. We had Riley on a year or two ago. And they were nice enough to come on back. We talked about their new album, Palms. So it was great.
J-Flo
was a guy I contacted. He's a beatbox champion. He even made us an awesome beatbox song out of Verbal Shenanigans, which I got to remember to keep using. I want to keep using that, like in different segues and stuff like that. But yeah, J-Flo.
KB
was a rapper recommended to us. KB was from Nashville, Tennessee, a rapper. He just put out his album.
J.S. Andara,
musician I fell in love with this year. Makes some awesome song. We had him on a few weeks ago from Nairobi, Africa, coming out with his new album in February. And my buddy Bill had gotten to record him, and that's kind of how I fell in love with his music. And I think he's going to be big. I see it.
Yeah, very talented. I remember talking about how he's a rare Christmas song I really enjoyed and all the one he made on there. So
right.
Keep an eye out for him. And finally, Chris Barron.
Chris Barron of the Spin Doctors. We had him on just a few weeks ago. Awesome interview. So,
yep.
Berlo, you get the honors.
I mean, we had a great list here. Some fun talking to. I went with Chris Barron. I think he gave us a phenomenal interview going through everything. Very truthful about depression he was going through when his vocal cords were paralyzed, kind of talk about getting back on the scene, talking about Woodstock 94 and what it was like. Just a fun interview all around, just very pleasurable. He sounded like if we went another half an hour, he wouldn't have blinked an eye. That's not much. Yeah.
I even got a couple compliments on the Chris Barron episode from some listeners, a.k.a. Dom. I also went with Chris Barron, so I'm going to choose my second one. I went with my second choice was Andrew W.K. Just because it was just a really interesting dude to talk to. He's just very unique, and it was kind of fun. Like, when he first started, I remember this allure around him, and like even like when my friends, like, you see this Andrew W.K. guy, like, interesting, and like his party songs would come on, everybody would sing along. I thought he was very cool. So I went with Andrew W.K.
Beautiful. All right. Why don't we go into inspirational?
Inspirational.
Yeah.
I chose you.
Aww.
You inspire me on what
I did not choose you.
What not to do.
Yeah, I chose Sky Falconry, but I digest. Inspirational. We have Sean Sweeney, who worked at the Jane Goodall Foundation and talked about all the work they're doing over there. Sailing Totem, that is the family that's been on sea for, I guess now since we're going to New Year, 8 years, traveling across the world, sailing, having their whole family there, getting them teachings and all that, and running around. Fun stories that we had from there.
Yep.
Michael Glenn, who is the first paraplegic hot air balloon pilot. Mm. Tom Breeny, former cop, who's also gay, who's been on CNN numerous amounts of times. And
three times on our show. Works.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Gunnar Esiason, that is Boomer's son, who works on the Boomer Esiason Foundation, working on
cystic fibrosis.
Thank you. Cystic fibrosis. He's going through it, and he's one of the chairmen of that. And Kasim Rashim, who is a Islamic speaker who talks about unity, who was on our show recently. Yeah.
Very big on like pointing out injustices, especially to people of color, and religious injustice, and women's rights and stuff like that. Is a lot of very, very, very insightful things here.
Yeah.
So, Berlo, I guess I'm up.
Yeah.
I went with Gunnar Esiason. Gunnar, is the son of Boomer Esiason, which is, that's cool. But Gunnar, I thought him opening up and being very clear about cystic fibrosis and living with it, and even, not just the interview, but going into, his Instagram post and looking at what they post and about what they very much show what people with cystic fibrosis deal with. I don't think it's a disease that a lot of people know a lot about. And the work that him and his father have done for that foundation is pretty amazing over the years. They say, Boomer has helped raise billions of dollars or something like that. And I'm trying even to work with them to try to put on a comedy show, hopefully, sometime in the new year. So we'll see. So I went with Gunnar Esiason.
Yeah, I looked through the list. You can't do anything wrong. My number two was Kasim. Maybe a little unorthodox, but I'm going Michael Glenn as my inspirational, just on the fact that he got paralyzed at an age. He always wanted to be a hot air balloon pilot. And basically, they were rejecting him straight out. They were saying, no, we can never approve for any reason a paraplegic pilot. And he went through all the work possible to show all the safety that's done, a totally new design on hot air balloons to allow him to sit there and have full control over everything. And I just thought it was just a really neat interview altogether. And it was one of my favorites, I would say, shockingly. But he was a really good guy, and just the work to be done to allow him to do what he loves, and all his amazing story.
Yeah, it was. I almost went outside of the box. I almost chose Brandon Novak. I thought he could have checked off two boxes here because his whole story was about getting clean and whatnot. But yeah, Michael Glenn and Gunnar Esiason. All right. What we got?
Next one, let's do our returning guest, best returning guest.
All right, returning guests. Guests that have been on the show before.
Devin Harris, former Jamaican bobsledder. Randy Santel, foodchallenges.com. A.G. Mattioli, LGBTQ director and producer of films. Tom Breeny, Jim Miller, Katra Corbett, Kirby Chambliss, Christian and Damian DeVoe, Riley Breckenridge, and Marcelo Balboa.
Yeah, basically we've already kind of summed up what these guys do, so let's get right into it. Berlo, who you got?
I'm going to go with Kirby Chambliss. I think that second interview, we're more, since we knew him and we chatted got a little bit more into the sport and more into his life, I thought it was a really fun laid-back interview. He himself said, he enjoyed chatting with us, having a fun conversation of what song would you have blasting in your ears as you're flying through the air. trying to get him to sing Highway Through the Danger Zone. But I thought he's a really fun guy. I can't wait to talk to him again sometime.
Yeah, I hope to have him on again.
Really delivered.
One of my favorites in general, just getting that guy on the show. Both times we've had him on. I also had him, but I kind of had him in a tie. So I also want – Tom Verney is also one of my favorites. We've had him on. We got to cover a lot of new things. But this year I went a little different because I thought the second interview we did with this guy was completely different than the first one. And I went with Jim Miller. If you remember, we talked to Jim Miller a lot, not as much about fighting, but we talked to Jim Miller a lot about like living with Lyme disease and some of the effects that had on him while training. And I remember him talking about not being able to get up the stairs and how he deals with that. I think we talked a little about craft beer and stuff like that. So I think we got to find the other side of Jim Miller, which you see on his like goofy Instagram posts and whatnot. So I went with Jim Miller the second time around.
Interesting.
Yes. All right. Next category.
We're going to do nature and science.
Nature and science.
Yeah, we're going to do, let's see what we got. We have Sean Sweeney, again, from the Jane Goodall Foundation. Paul Zaloom, who played Beekman in Beekman's World. Sky Falconry, that is a... it's a vacation slash resort slash hike, if you will, where they take you out and allow you to do falconry with different hawks and eagles and items like that. We have Sailing Totem. That is the family that sails throughout the world and all, visiting different islands and so forth. Been on the boat for about 8 years now. We have Peter Kiljan. That was a veterinarian over in the UK who does vet work on various wildlife animals. We have Terry Kirby, who is a part of the Hawaiian submarine team, who dives down and does different adventures looking for sunken treasures and items like that. We had Reed Booth, who was the killer bee guy, goes around and basically gets in a suit and tries to... capture all these hives of killer bees over in Arizona. And Lauren Sampson, who was on our Christmas show, yep, who runs a reindeer farm in Alaska.
Yeah. A lot of cool ones there. All right, I'll jump right into it. I was really torn between the two of these interviews because they kind of reminded me of each other. And that was with Lauren Sampson last weekend. With the Christmas episode, the reindeer episode, but I went with Sky Falconry. I remember laughing very hard about telling them to name a bird after us. It was Danny Glover, the Verbal Shenanigans bird. I remember it just being a very fun interview. They were cool people. I liked their videos on Instagram. They're very funny. So I really found Sky Falconry to be, I don't know, just a very fun interview.
Yeah, they were my number two, definitely. I mean, this might be one of the more difficult groupings I had. I know I bounced through a couple of them right now. I went with Reed Booth, the killer bee one. I thought that was the most interesting, and how basically somebody asked him, hey, do you want to do this kind of thing? And all just going through the stories of how dangerous these bees are, some of the stories about a woman having a killer beehive on her car going 70 miles an hour and it still didn't kick the damn hive off her car. I thought he was really fun to chat with and all really interesting, so I went with him.
Absolutely. That was good, too. All right, let's keep it moving.
All right. We'll do female now.
All right.
So we have Ray Halit, Zap.
Yep.
Denise Disharoon, she's a part of Sky Falconry. Behan Gifford, she's a part of Sailing Totem. Sandy Martin from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Katra Corbett, the extreme ultra runner. Carrie Kimmel, singer. Elizabeth Pitko, she is a model, mm-hmm, and a former ice skater. Lucy Spraggan. Lauren Sampson, and today's episode, Jennifer Armstrong.
Yes. All right. Am I up?
Actually, I think I'm up on this one.
Oh, well, all right.
Yeah, you started with Sky Falcon.
All right, go ahead. We got
For this one, just to put her in there, I'm going to give it to Lucy Spraggan.
Damn it.
really fun. That's why I told you to have two ready.
Yep.
Really fun interview. Enjoyed talking to her about both her singing career and, like you said, all the stuff with the caves, and just really laid back, enjoyable. Couldn't ask for anybody who really just understands what the show is. Just
She was just one of the unexpected. Like, we didn't expect much because we didn't know a lot about her going in. We were just emailing, like, oh, she's interesting. Here are some of her songs, but very cool. Also, she's also a lesbian who fosters children. Just a fascinating interview. So she was almost my choice for interview of the year. So she was in my top three.
Wow.
Yep.
That's cool.
Yep. So, in for sake of not having the same one, I'm going to go with Sandy Martin.
She was my number two.
Yeah. So Sandy Martin, we are both love Always Sunny in Philadelphia. She does a ridiculous job of playing Mac's mother. And she just had a good personality, laughed a lot, was thankful for the interview, wasn't really sure what podcasts were, and has a ton of acting experience, and I just found her hilarious. So I'm going to go with Sandy Martin.
Beautiful. I have a list for other. I'm not sure if we want to do that.
No,
but,
let's get right into it.
Well, let's do two more, I guess, off-the-cuff ones. What would you say was your surprise? You might have already answered your surprise great guest.
Surprise definitely for me, like I said, was Lucy Spraggan. Just for the sheer sake of not knowing anything about her and enjoying it so much. I'll throw a surprise out there too. Snow. I really enjoyed Snow, the singer, not Al. I enjoyed Al Snow too, don't get me wrong. Snow, the Canadian reggae artist, he was so laid back and talked about jail time, didn't care about any new singles. Just like, yeah, make music, man. I'm not allowed here. I'm not allowed there. I thought he was really fun. So Snow would definitely caught me off guard as one of the better interviews of the year, too.
My surprise great guest, I would say, would be Rich Binning, which is the puppetry of the penis guy. Because I remember when I put him on the calendar, it was the biggest running joke.
Yeah.
I would say the only one I can compare it to as running joke was a guest from last year, which was John C. Lear, who played the Geico Cage.
Oh, yeah.
Where we just, it was just like every week, and all it's like, puppetry of the penis, almost here. But I thought he really got what our show was. He was really laid back. He got into every part about it and had fun about it. And I loved how he talked about how guys are a little squeamish going to the show. It's kind of like, oh, I don't want to have fun. I don't want to look gay, for lack of a better term. And he's like, those are the people we kind of work on to try to just, hey, lay back and, oh, you're not touching anything or whatever. This is just a fun show. Check us out. So I thought he was really cool.
Yep. What was the second off-the-cuff one?
Off-the-cuff one? I mean, somebody we didn't say, I'd say Aaron Yoder, the backwards mile world champion and all, just because, again, we kind of went to it with, what did we get?
Yeah.
And he is a guy who just got in on just chatting away about why he got into it. And I remember that hilarious story of how he was going to race some other coach. He was going to go backwards. The other guy was going to go forwards, and he chickened out the guy. So.
Yeah, he was good. For sure.
One more award before we get the best guest. I'm going to have the awkward or never coming back on this show episode. We're not necessarily putting the people in the category because they were absolutely terrible, but that could be a reason. But there's something that makes you say, probably not going to be hitting the return guest list anytime soon.
I can think of at least two. Well, who you got? Who do you got?
For me, it will be Steve Whiting.
Really?
It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and formerly the Hogan family. I remember when we contacted him, we just did Bob Rush. We were kind of in a week where we're like, oh, we don't have anybody. And I was just looking for different things, and I was looking for the route kind of like what you did, since we love Sunny. Let's go for some of the smaller characters. And I remember when I went through his website to send him our spiel, his email back, the heading was, what do you want? And, you know, we interviewed him. He was all right as a guest. He can go on for a while. He can tell a story. That's beyond a shadow of a doubt. But the reason I put him on this list is when I sent him the link in case he wanted to share it out, and I also sent him the Instagram that we do each guest, his response back was, "Did you misspell my last name on purpose?" And I remember
a little air of ego.
And he never responded back, which makes me think he doesn't put us in the highest regards, possibly.
Yeah.
Or he just
a little ego
just not his style.
Yeah. Seems like he had a little ego. I agree with that. I had two. One would be Ray Hollett, who was zapped from American Gladiators. Just seemed out of it. Just didn't seem very excited at all. Seemed like she was definitely maybe under the influence of something, possibly. I also have a second one, which I think you'll find funny, because it didn't make the show. we interviewed a woman. I'm pretty sure it was this year, and if not, we'll just pretend it was this year. We were recommended to who thought she was the reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, that was this year.
And she just kept talking about this doctor, and she had birds tweeting in the background. She made no sense the entire time. Like, she would stop halfway and have to move, and she was just rambling on and on and on and on. And we were just, like, looking at each other during the thing, like, what is this woman talking about? And that never actually made the show. So that would be my other one.
Yeah, if I recall, you were getting pushed, where is it, and it never happened. We never got that supposed doctor who was going to back up that she was Marilyn Monroe, never picked up.
Yeah, I can't say that I followed up either. But that was brutal. So, All right,
Scott.
Yeah.
It's the big one now. It's time for Best Guest of 2018.
Best Guest of 2018. All right. Who's up?
I'll hand it off to you.
Okay. I narrowed it down to three. There were a lot. I think I mentioned I had Lucy Spraggan in up there. She was one of my favorites. The second one I had, I was going to choose Chris Barron. He was my number one music guest. So he was very close to up there. As were many other people, but I went with comedian Pete Corielli. For several reasons. One, I've been a big fan. I listen to his podcast weekly. I really like his comedy. I got to see him just a couple weeks ago, so it felt like everything came full circle. He was funny. He was interesting. He got to talk about his writing on Kevin James' show. He was making fun of you. He was making fun of himself. He was making fun of Irish people. It was just a fun interview, and for me, it was just different. It was different than our sports and music guys, and it was just for me, he got the interview of the year.
Beautiful change of pace and all. Yes, if I recall, I have a more southern accent than when he did an interview with Larry the Cable Guy, if I recall, he said.
Yeah, he was good, man. He was a lot of fun. Really down to earth. And like I said, it was kind of one of those, it's more of the story, too. The before interviewing, the interviewing him, and then, like, meeting him at the end of the year, I feel like it wrapped it up in a nice package for me. So that was my choice.
Yep. My choice, because it was sentimental, it was really cool to talk to, and it was the last time you and I were in the same room together doing this podcast. It would be John Schneider.
Johnny Schneider.
Really fun to chat with. He was really appreciative. I remember talking about Dukes of Hazzard, ironically telling, we both have the same idea, the weirdest Dukes of Hazzard episode when he was saving an alien from Boss Hog. We talked about his movie Snow Days. I guess he survived his first attempt at jumping the Duke's car, because he's not on my brackets for next year's Who Do You Bring Back from the Dead. But I think he was really down to earth, really fun, a real amazing surprise to get him on there, and it was a nice little send-off to the Jersey days, if you will. So it was a really good day, and I remember it well. So
Beautiful. So, guys, that is the Verbies, if you will, are just a reflection of some of the awesome interviews we've had. Hopefully next year brings the same caliber of interview. How we've been very, very lucky. I got to say, sometimes it goes in waves where we're like, well, I don't know who the hell we're talking to next week. And all of a sudden, we just load up our schedule. We have all of a sudden we have two interviews a night, three interviews a night. And it's kind of the fun for us, too, even though it is work, finding these guests and thinking of new ideas that would be entertaining, and also kind of shooting for people that we never think we would, and suddenly getting them. So it's pretty cool. We've gotten to talk. I know I've said this before in the case years ago when Mike first came on, we after we had gotten our first guest or two and started realizing that it was more possible than not, we started making a list of like who we'd want to talk to and categories of people want to talk to. And I got to say, we have talked to many people from those categories, and if not the exact people that we put on there, from Lenny Dykstra to the guys from Jackass to Washington Redskin to NASCAR drivers to you name it. We've talked to a lot of people. Mo Vaughn. I don't know why he just popped in my head, but yeah, a lot of interesting people. So very, very thankful for that over the years. And we've been doing this for close to 5 years now, I think. So,
yeah, and we get a lot of praise from a lot of people asking, how the hell do we get some of these people? To give the audience some perspective of how weird sometimes things are, we record on Mondays. We went into a Sunday saying we had no guests. By the time we showed up on Monday, we had Christian Okoye, Devin Harris, the Jamaican bobsledder, and Randy Santel all on the same show.
Right. Yeah.
And then we almost had four a couple weeks ago.
Right. Yeah. We had three going. We almost had another one, which I'm going to still bother that guy to get him on. don't want to reveal who that is because I'm scared of him. So, but yeah, so it's been another year. It's been another pleasure. We'll hopefully have some new things next year. Come up with some new bits, new guests, new things to do. Maybe some more video content and stuff like that. So we're trying here.
Yeah.
Berlo, before we go, do you have any New Year's resolutions or anything you are focusing on? Not necessarily like I have to do this, it's my resolution, but anything you're looking forward to in the new year?
Well, I'm going to finally pay off the credit card. So I'm down to just a whole home payoff thing. I guess that'll take a while.
Yep.
Unless I hit the Powerball. I think I'm going to work on some, music parodies. It's just something that kind of interests me and really? Something I'm going to work on for the show. So,
I like it.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty decent when I can do it. Like, I was starting on something. I don't want to spoil it because I think I'm going to bring it out later.
Mm-hmm.
But I started getting into it. I'm like, okay, I kind of see where I'm going there. So it's something I'm more interested in. Definitely trying to figure out more expanding of a comedy, whether it's through the page, Michael Berlew random stuff, or if I have the time, dare I say, go back to an open mic and make that happen. Something to kind of expand the comedy horizons, if you will.
Yeah. No. Nice. For me, I would say I want to stick to the comedy I've been doing. I feel like I've got a good amount of shows this year, but I want to really focus on developing a new 15 minutes to a half hour, like completely new. I really took some major steps in doing that over the last 3 weeks. I finally put the balls out there to start open my sets with a brand new bit, and it's like 6 or 7 minutes long. So that's really kind of giving me some confidence that, like, yeah, this stuff is funny. You don't need to do stuff, you know, that works all the time. And so comedy wise there's that. I want to make more video content. I have ideas. I just got to sit down and do them just like everybody. And the other thing is I have an idea for a book that I've had for years and years and years, and whether I ever like actually sit down and publish it or anything like that, that's not really the goal, but the thing is to kind of get out there and write it and start writing some chapters of it or some ideas. So I've had this idea for a long time. Even if I can get some stuff out on a document, okay, or a notebook or whatever, that would be kind of a goal. And personally, I just, like most people, I want to I want to, you know, shed a couple pounds and, you know, keep. I've been doing well with the exercise since November again, but I went through a little lull there in like September, October. So I want to keep up with that, like most other fat asses in America. So, but I've been doing pretty good. Doing pretty good. And I, Berl, any predictions on anything strange that'll happen in the new year? I think you gave us something crazy one year. I don't remember what it was, but it sounds familiar. I don't know.
One thing I will say, 2019, I say Colin Kaepernick wins his lawsuit against the NFL.
Ah.
Do
we see him play anywhere? CFL?
I don't think he will be playing anywhere. I do. If he was any other position, like Eric Reed was safety, he got a job back. And you kind of, there's been a lot of rumors. He talks about how he's getting drug tested every single week versus anybody else. So there's stuff like that. But I can totally see him taking a notch against the NFL, and he becomes like a societal kind of inspiration, more in that sense, and all to be a public speaker and be more for bringing the cultures together and stuff like that. I don't see him in the NFL ever again.
Yeah. Interesting. All right.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with a weird prediction. I don't even know where this is coming from, but I thought about it earlier today. I think we're going to see Rage Against the Machine get back together. The band Rage Against the Machine. I think we're going to see them get back together. Enough of this rage with Be Real from Cypress Hill, Prophets of Rage. It's not the same. I think we're going to see the guys from Rage and Zach De La Roca get back together and do a big tour, or do like Bonnaroo and stuff like that. I think it's coming. So, yeah, weird prediction. But guys, I guess that's it. Real quick, did you ever know, the song we play at New Year's?
Shall all acquaintance be forgot?
Yeah, Auld Lang Syne or whatever it is. Auld Lang Syne. Did you ever like know the lyrics to that song, or am I the only one that always just like mouth like the lyrics and pretended I knew what it was?
I think I pretty much told you the lyrics I know. Shall all acquaintance be forgot?
Yeah. Well, let me just read them to you before we get out of here.
This might
open some eyes, because I had to look it up myself, because I'm like, it's been 30-something years, and I've never known what the hell they're saying during that. You know the scene in It's a Wonderful Life, the end? I have no idea what this is, but it should old acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind. So old acquaintance be forgot, never brought to mind. Should old acquaintance be forgot and Auld Lang Syne. The song is Auld Lang Syne. Apparently, it means Auld Lang Syne. It was some kind of it was a poem or something. In the hold on, Wiktionary. Let's see. Let me just bring all. I can cut this out. Auld Lang Syne, Wikipedia. Okay, so it is a Scots language poem written by Robert Burns in 1788 and used to set a tune of a traditional folk song. It's well known in many countries, especially in English-speaking world. It is traditionally used to being farewell to the old year at the stroke of midnight by New Year's Eve. By extension, it's sung at funerals, graduations, and farewells or endings to occasions. So the poem Scott's title may be translated into standard English as old long since, or more idiomatically, long, long ago, or days gone by, or old times. So that's what that actually means. Okay. So for Auld Lang Syne, my dear, for Auld Lang Syne, we take a cup of kindness yet for Auld Lang Syne. And surely you'll buy your pint cup, and surely I'll buy mine. And we take a cup of kisses yet for Auld Lang Syne. We too have run about the slopes and picked the daisies fine, but we've been wandering many a weary foot in Auld Lang Syne. We too have paddled in the stream from morning sun till dine, but seas between us broad have roared since Auld Lang Syne. And there's a hand, my trusty friend, and give us a hand of thine, and well take a right good will drought with Auld Lang Syne. Should Auld acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind, should Auld acquaintance be forgot and Auld Lang Syne. And it goes on for like another three verses. If there's anybody out there that actually knew those lyrics, I'm calling BS. There's no way anybody knows what they're saying during that song.
By the time you got to the second lyric, I'm already turning off the TV and going to bed, so I don't care.
You already hung up the phone.
Yeah.
But, yeah, when all those people in Times Square are singing that, I guarantee that people know three words. Nah.
Yeah.
But, Berlo, I guess here's to another year of doing this here program and kind of what we can come up with. And as always, it's been a pleasure. And enjoy New Year's Eve. And
I'll be monkey suiting it up.
I was going to say, take that monkey suit off.
It's a new year. It's a new regime. The monkey suit.
Is Mariah Carey performing tonight?
I don't even keep track. I still chuckle how it's Dick Clark's New Year's Eve. It's like it wasn't his for the last 10 years, even when he was alive. So
happy New Year. All right, guys, adios. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep doing it at your back. We will see you next week, next year. Bye-bye.
See ya.